Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are searching for truths in ancient orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week, free of charge, either as a podcast on Apple iTunes or on the internet at epostle.net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World. Whether you're listening on CD, over the internet, or on your MP3 player, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Welcome to The Next Step. Hey, this is Father Vazquez welcoming you back to The Next Step, a podcast dedicated to looking at life and inspecting the very fabric of our being through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission and is brought to you exclusively by the good folks at the Apostles Net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. So if you're ready, let's take the next step. Christ is risen. That is the message for today. That's the greeting for today, as it should be for every day, because it is a message that love is won. The victory is love. And you know what? That is a powerful one, especially day and age like today, but it's a powerful one anytime. And that's how I want to start off this podcast and welcome you. And I want to welcome so many of you. I guess we put out a special podcast for Easter Sunday, and the numbers were staggering. We had our highest listener audience on that day, and I hope you're all on board now for this week and continue to be with us. So welcome, everybody. Appreciate the call I got from Argentina and people from all over the world checking in with us, telling us that here's a podcast that's making a little difference in your life. So thank you, and I hope that we always stay worthy to that call, really bringing apostolic evangelism in a very modern setting through this podcast. And we're going to be talking about some of the old things that we did, because we're going to be talking about Holy Week, the end of Holy Week. I dropped you off last week. We were going to do the English service, and then we put together a podcast, and here we are with our regular weekly show. We've got, of course, Harach coming in from London with his global perspective. We've got a crackpot. Actually, it's Ani with her bubbles, and you'll have to hold off and see what I meant by that, but it's definitely a crackpot. And today's topic, we're going to be talking about, well, of all things, money. What? Easter? Money? Well, we're going to talk about the role of money and maybe about taxes, you know, because after all, today is April 15th. And whether you're in the United States or anywhere else in the world, everybody has to pay what we do not want to pay. One of the leaders in this country, Benjamin Franklin, he made a point and he said that there are only two things for certain: death and taxes. Think about that for a moment. Death and taxes. Well, we took care of one of them, didn't we? Last week with Easter, no more death. We don't have to talk about death anymore. So the only one thing for sure that remains is taxes. We'll be talking about that. And no matter where you are in the world, you know that that is one of those necessary things. And it is also one of those evil things, because it really taps into something that, well, we have a hard time parting with. And that is that material wealth that we amass and we accumulate. Hey, listen, before we start today's podcast, we put off listening to good music for way too long. How about we start off today with an old Beatles tune? And here is David Crosby, along with Crosby, Stills, and Nash, singing that song.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly into the light of the dark black of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
Well, of course, that was Blackbird. And I wanted to start off with something calming because it was a roller coaster of a ride, one that still hasn't ended. You know, we say the tradition is for the next 40 days you greet one another saying Christ is risen. And actually, that excitement of the resurrected Lord, or love winning out against evil, against all that is bad and all that it is negative in this world, is really a pronouncement that we need to make not only during Easter time, but every single day of our lives as we live in faith. As you move in faith, you understand what the role of love has in store for you and how love can work in your life. But I got to tell you, it did not end with Easter Sunday. I've been on a high, and you could probably tell from my voice, but it has been just so exciting. Look, Easter morning, we got up at, I think it was 4:30, group of us went to the Hollywood Bowl. Now, you got to check out the Hollywood Bowl. If you're not in the Los Angeles area, check it out on the internet. It's this beautiful, beautiful bowl, but imagine you get there in the dark. And as the light is coming out, as the sun is coming up over the Hollywood Hills, you start hearing the gospel message of Christ being resurrected. You hear the people singing. And all of a sudden, the first thing that you notice is that before Christ comes, before the message of Christ's resurrection, is that the light, that in the darkness, light comes out. This was very profound for me because, you know, in the Armenian church, as we spoke about in previous podcasts, we live Holy Week out. So one of the services that we have during Holy Week is the Order of Darkness on Holy Thursday. And so on that evening, all the lights went out, and you have this situation where you could contemplate what is life without God, what is life without that holiness, without Christ, without light, the darkness that is all around us. And then here we were on Sunday morning, and we were looking up at these hills that slowly began to take color and form. And as you see the light coming in, what happens? Life comes in. Interesting, isn't it, how life and light are connected in such a way, in such an integral way. And you know what? Right after we saw the sun rise, that's when we started hearing the stories of Christ's resurrection. And so it was on that natural high that we went off to our church, celebrated the Divine Liturgy, and what, oh man, I've never seen that many people just, I mean, like, you got to remember in the middle of Glendale, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of Armenians, but, you know, this is a town that doesn't respect much of religion or faith. And all of a sudden, just out of the woodwork, people are piling in. And we had one of those scenes, very, very biblical. You know, you kind of had to knock down the walls to get into the church. And we were together, we celebrated, we had the singing of the Easter hymns, and of course the Holy Communion. We got a message out there, and you know, I got to tell you that thanks to Apostle, we've been able to now set up a second site called Sermons from Glendale, and the numbers on that are pretty profound too. Quite a number of people following. Most of those sermons are in Armenian, I want to caution you, but the English one has been put up there as well for Easter, so you might want to check that out. It's you can go to apostle.net, and there's another button for them, Sermons from Glendale. But right after Easter was over, I guess in our head we've been thinking about Warren, and I've talked about Warren in the past. And we prayed for him throughout the service. My sister called me and said, well, you know, we've been praying for Warren. We've been going, what's the latest? Well, you know, if you remember, Warren was going to be up for parole on Monday morning. You know, last week I shared with you some stories about how God is working in our ministry, how God really allows each and every one of us to open our eyes. Even when we get a little bit cocky and we think that we know it all, he kind of slaps us down and lets us realize that, you know, he is in charge. Because Monday evening, we had not heard from Warren. I got an email from my sister, said any news. And you know where my head went was just like, well, if there's like no news, it's got to be bad news. You know, he didn't get it. Obviously, you know, it's another shutdown of justice. Another shootdown of justice. Still not believing in the power of the good. Still not believing. And sure enough, my sister called me. I was floored. I literally was floored. She called me and she said, we just got word that parole has been granted. And you know what? For that moment, I was shocked. Tears came to my eyes, but it also reminded me of what those women that went to the grave of Christ must have experienced. Of course, on such a grander scale. But certainly, you understand what I'm getting at is like even the women who went to Jesus's tomb, they had heard him. They knew he was the Lord. They knew that he said that, you know, nothing's going to keep me down. But still, they went to the tomb expecting to see a dead Jesus. In the same way, we sometimes pray, and we know that the power of prayer is there. We know that for us, what is impossible is possible with God. And we know that people's hearts have to be softened at some point. And we knew that parole was just about to come to Warren. And still, in our hearts, there's that little bit of doubt that, hey, if there's no news, it must be bad news. And so when we got this news, I realized, you know what? Here is the lesson in humility. Trust God. And there it is. That was it. We got this news Monday night. Of course, we're still excited about the prospect of him being released. We're looking forward to it. Of course, there's a few other hurdles that have to do with the governor, and in future podcasts, I'll be sharing some of the stories with you, but never, never lose hope. Tuesday morning, I heard from I'm just telling you how things just kept continuing. Tuesday morning, I heard from Gregory Baylarian, our resident artist, so to speak. And he says, Father Voskin, I have got a picture for you. And it is this picture called Rise, Christ Rising. We put it up on our website. You might want to check it out. It's up for sale. Prints are for sale, and with a portion of the profits coming to the Inner Shoes Ministry. But what's exciting about the picture is, yeah, the money's exciting always. We're going to be talking about that in a few minutes. But what's exciting about the picture is the way it flows. How at the culmination of this Holy Week, you know, we've been talking for how many weeks now about getting ready for Holy Week, getting ready for Easter through our Lenten practices, and then, of course, the vigil that we hold throughout Holy Week and the different services and taking Jesus up to the cross and going to the grave of Christ. And when there is resurrection, it is all-consuming. And it's not just a question of sitting there and saying Christ is risen. It's realizing that, yes, your problems, your difficulties have risen because the power of love, the ability for love to conquer over evil, belongs to all of us. We're partakers of that, aren't we? And you know, when we talk about Jesus is the only way, this is what people forget about. You know, people get all hung up. Oh, well, what about the Muslims? What about the Jews and everything? You got to think beyond that. That's where I bring you into this Armenian Orthodoxy. It's really going back to the roots of what Jesus was all about. If I told you this, love is the only way, would there be anybody who would challenge that? Love is really the only way. Love is our only salvation. And you see, once you're able to swap out that word, which Nerses Shnorhali, I've spoken in the past about this, he gives us that primer. He says the name of love is Jesus. So if you were to take out that Jesus and put in the word love, love is the only way. Well, you say, well, that's a little broad understanding. No, it isn't. It's exactly biblical, and it comes to us from the time of the resurrection. Because what was being crucified on that cross? It was the manifestation of love. Love was being crucified. Jesus, the incarnation of love, was up on that cross. And so when you look at it in those terms, then you understand that you are a player of the crucifixion as much as you are of the resurrection. Because who put Jesus up on the cross? Was it Judas? Was it the Pharisees? Was it the Romans? Or is it you and me every time we go against the nature of love? Every time you and me go against what he taught us, to love one another, to be incarnations of love ourselves. After the service of the crucifixion, in our tradition, we actually build a tomb, and the faithful bring their offerings of flowers and candles and place them all around the tomb and decorating the tomb, remembering, of course, that Jesus was laid in the tomb, according to the gospel account, by a man named Joseph of Arimathea. I just like saying that word, you know? So anyway, people remember that. But one of the traditions that has just popped up recently is that people will now crawl underneath the tomb of Christ, not knowing what it is, but it's one of those traditions that has kind of evolved that people just like doing it. Oh, we crawled underneath. But if you think about it, it's exactly in line with everything that we're saying. If you are going to experience that Holy Week, you need to go under the tomb. And in so doing, you remember that, yes, as Jesus went between the time between his crucifixion and Easter morning, the tradition is that he preached to the souls in hell. Well, what is that state of hell? The absence of God. As you go under the tomb, you realize that it is the one place where God is not there. God is not in death. And so as you rise from there, it's an opportunity to really leave the hell that is consuming your life at the appropriate place, under the tomb, in a place where God is not there. The symbolism is rich. The symbolism is all around us. And it's just for us to really tap into it. Holy Week gave us that opportunity, but the excitement for me is that it's continuing, whether it's through this artwork that we're sharing with you on the web, or the beautiful story of Warren Goodman not giving up hope after 14 years being imprisoned and staying to his story of truth that he did not commit the crime and being offered this chance at parole. That each of our hells, each of our crucifixions can be overcome when we put our faith in the one who overcame the ultimate hell, that overcame the ultimate cross. To me, that was the blessing of this Easter Sunday. And here we are, 4 days later, paying taxes. What a downer. Well, I said we'd talk about taxes. We definitely will. Actually, just a very short little piece about that. But how about if we go to our bubbles? Because I know you're wondering, who is this crackpot? Well, before I give away any more, here's Ani with our spiritual bubble.
Cracked Pot, today's spiritual bubble. An elderly Chinese woman had two large pots, each hung on the ends of a pole which she carried across her neck. One of the pots had a crack in it, while the other pot was perfect and always delivered a full portion of water. At the end of the long walks from the stream to the house, the cracked pot arrived only half full. For 2 full years, this went on daily, with the woman bringing home only 1.5 pots of water. Of course, the perfect pot was proud of its accomplishments. But the poor cracked pot was ashamed of its own imperfection and miserable that it could only do half of what it had been made to do. After 2 years of what it perceived to be bitter failure, it spoke to the woman one day by the stream. "I am ashamed of myself," the pot said, "because this crack in my side causes water to leak out all the way back to your house." The old woman smiled. "Did you notice that there are flowers on your side of the path, but not on the other pot's side? That's because I have always known about your flaw, so I planted flower seeds on your side of the path, and every day while we walk back, you water them. For 2 years, I have been able to pick these beautiful flowers and decorate the table. Without you being just the way you are, there would not be this beauty to grace the house. Each of us has our own unique flaw, but it's the cracks and flaws that we have that make our lives together so very interesting and rewarding. You've just got to take each person for what they are and look for the good in them. This has been your spiritual bubble. May it float on the wind to heaven."
Nice little story there, isn't it? Yeah, a lot of times we wonder about those cracks in our pots. There's always some good out of everything. And it's hard sometimes when we think about taxes to find that there's something good, especially if you had to take out a loan to pay your taxes. Like, don't remind me right now.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man.
Taxes, it's one of those necessary evils, isn't it? You don't know how you're going to pay for a bridge, but if you have taxes, you can pay for it. Of course, income tax goes to other things, but taxes are taxes. They're something you work for and somebody benefits from other than you, or it could be thought of as sharing the wealth. I'm not going to get into the econ lesson for today. What I'd like to do is talk about really the role of money inside of our lives, as taxes give us an opportunity to discuss that. On several occasions, Jesus brings up the issue of money, and he in fact makes this pronouncement, which many people have a difficult time with, when he tells the rich man to sell everything and follow me. And the rich man has a very difficult time understanding what Jesus wants to do, and Jesus turns around and says, "Look, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter heaven." And probably since he's pronounced those words, there hasn't been more discussion about anything else more than this one topic. And why? Because usually it's probably the rich ones that are offended by that. I don't blame them. I guess if he said it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a priest to go to heaven, I would be kind of offended. Probably give up the priesthood at that moment, although I don't know if I'd do that, but would it be very difficult to give up your money if you knew that it would be a hindrance. Well, what is this all about? In fact, in the Gospels, in three of the Gospels, we hear the story of taxation, where they come up to Jesus, and it's interesting because it's prefaced. Let's follow the one in Luke chapter 20. It's prefaced by saying that a group of Jesus' adversaries, the Pharisees, wanted to trick him and were looking for a way to get Jesus to speak against the government. So they said to him, "Master, Rabbi, is it appropriate for us to pay taxes to Caesar, to the Romans, to the emperor?" And Jesus, what the scripture says, Jesus, realizing that they were out to trick him, asks for a coin. And he asks whose picture is on the coin, and they say Caesar's. And very simply, he turns to them and says, "Give to Caesar what is Caesar's." And he adds the second part, saying, "Give to God what is God's." And so Jesus answers the question by setting up this dichotomy, by saying there is God's world and there is the physical world that you exist in. And sometimes we get hung up and fail to realize that the two really do intersect. Let me share with you a story which we did not get a chance to dissect just a few weeks ago. If you remember, every week of Lent had a unique message. That particular week, we were discussing issues that were taking place that were actually in very real time taking place in Darfur. And we didn't get a chance to look at this story. In particular, I'm talking about the story of the unjust steward. Steward is basically a nice way of saying manager. This is a manager. Some guy had a manager who would take care of all of his dealings, all of his business. And they found out that this guy was stealing off of the top, that he was what is called today dishonest. Well, I shouldn't say today dishonest. I mean, like, that's not a big deal these days, right? I mean, people say they're dishonest. You say, well, who isn't? But in those times, if somebody was dishonest, it was grounds for dismissal. And so this manager was going to be dismissed from his job. He found out that his employer had charges against him. And he says, "I don't know what to do." Jesus tells us in a parable about this manager. He said that this man did not know what to do because he was too lazy to work and he was too proud to beg. So he says, "You know what? My employer has a lot of people that owe him money." So he goes up to the first guy that owed him some money and he says, "How much do you owe my employer?" Guy said, "I owe him $100,000. He says, "Fine." He said, "Would it be better if would you pay it if I could negotiate that amount?" And the guy said, "Sure. Depends on what you could negotiate." So he says, "How about half price?" He says, "Give me $50,000. So the guy writes a check out for $50,000 and they pay off his employer. The next guy, he says, "How much do you owe him?" He says, $25,000. He says, "You know what? Let's cut a deal." He says, "Instead of $25,000, give me $15,000. Guy says, "Okay." Writes him a checkout. And he keeps doing this. So what has this guy done? He has been found shrewd. He's been alert. He's streetwise. And when his employer found out, this is the remarkable part about the parable, which we read in the Gospel of Luke. In the parable, Jesus tells us when the employer found out that he had done these negotiations, he commended the guy. He commended the dishonest steward, the manager. He says, "Good going. Thanks." Well, of course, he's happy, right? Because he got some money that he wouldn't have otherwise gotten. Maybe not the amount that he wanted, but at least he got something. But that's beyond, that's again, the economics of it. What's the story about? Well, let me read you exactly what the scripture says. Because in these words, we understand the purpose of the parable. Jesus Again, this is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 16. As Jesus said, the master or the employer commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in their dealings with their own kind than the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. Jesus concludes this parable by saying, no servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Now, this parable, I got to tell you, it is really one of the most confusing ones on its face, because you see that again, somebody who has done something dishonest becomes the hero of the parable, just like the prodigal or like the judge, the dishonest judge that we heard about during Lent. This steward, this manager is being commended for what? For being dishonest. But even more than that, Jesus brings it home by saying, for acting shrewdly, acting by the rules of this world. And when we talk about taxes, we have to remember that taxes are used, or they should be at least, used to do a lot of good things. Like you and I cannot build a school, we cannot build the roads, but together collectively we can put our money together through taxes to say hire a fire department or to have a police unit and so on. So taxes, whether local, state, or federal, they have to serve a common good, a common purpose. And in the same way, when it comes to doing spiritual work, you can never discount the importance of that money. A lot of times people don't want to talk about that because they think that it is exclusive. They are mutually exclusive, God and money. What Jesus said is you cannot serve both. So what do you serve? You serve God and you use money. You see, money is just a tool. That's all it is. It's a way to do your work. And the minute you lose sight of it, the minute you start ascribing intrinsic value to it, that the money itself has some kind of value in itself, that's when you lose sight of what this is all about, of the role of money and how to accomplish your work. Have you ever heard that saying from St. Paul, money is the root of all evil? Well, if you've heard it, you've heard it wrong. He says, the love of money is the root of all evil, not money. You need money, and there's a lot of good it can do. Just like in taxes, as we said a few minutes ago, right? You and I cannot maintain our own fire department. We cannot create a school building. I don't have enough money to make a school. But by paying taxes, I expect a larger body, a collective, a group of us, all of our taxes going in there and creating that school, the road, the fire department, the dam, and so on. Well, now, what about churches? We put money into churches. Do they then have an obligation to do what? How about a song? And I promise I'll answer that.
White houses and neat little rows contrasting against the sky. Tumble down black shacks over the tracks. Children so hungry they could cry. The chrome, the steel, the metal dream, leaving the teepee to rot. The escapist young mind left behind, saving dimes for community pot. You better get straight. You better get straight. TV is on.
o'clock news and channels of full colored light.
Eric Burdon and the Animals singing White House. That's about a 40-year-old song, and you realize that many of the issues that he talks about in the song are still issues today. And of course, since the time of Christ, we've had 2,000 years go by, and a lot of the same issues are there. And I'd like to believe that what we talk about is Armenian Orthodoxy from the beginning of time, even a longer time period than that, that there are certain basic issues that we need to confront and address. That is the mission of the church. To continue the work that Jesus Christ came and gave us the ultimate example to do. To love one another. By this they will know that you are my children. And so loving one another becomes the expression by which we describe ourselves as Christians. As children of God. And so the collective, which we call the family of Christians, the church, has to do that mission. In other words, by paying the taxes, you get the infrastructure to be built. Right? Well, sometimes it's difficult to understand this because you say, well, in loving, we don't need money. But what happens in the times of violence? For instance, what's taking place right now in Darfur? For instance, the hungry children all around us. For instance, the abuse that we see all around us. Well, we do need money to do this kind of work. That's why I really challenge you to push yourselves to the limits. When we talk about church and Armenian Orthodoxy, I'm not talking about building buildings. I'm not talking about putting together little parties where we can honor people that we describe as debutantes or worthy of special valor and medals. I'm talking about doing the actual hands, feet, legwork that Jesus Christ wanted us to do by feeding the hungry, by visiting those in jail, by clothing the naked. And how do you do this? Well, you need money, and that money becomes a tool by which you work. I use tax day to really think about, for us to think about really our response to God's work, to God's love for us. Remember last week in our Easter message in particular, I challenged you to really take on a positive approach to answering God's love by being involved, taking on responsibility to be messengers of that love yourself in the work that you do. And certainly through money, we are able to advance a lot of these projects that we have. Projects that I hope you find worthwhile, but definitely I'm convinced are in line with what Scripture, what God has placed in our hearts. We're going to see a group of people working together in the global perspective today. A little bit beyond what you might expect. We talked about some Christians getting together and becoming the church. Check out today's installment of The Global Perspective with Harach Chilingirya.
This is Harach in London, and welcome to this week's Global Perspective. For weeks we have been discussing global conflicts, complex developments and political and economic crises around the world. But today, this week after Easter, I want to present to you a very positive story indeed. A first ever event emanating from the least expected part of the world, the conflict-torn and ever-troublesome Lebanon. Yes, you heard it right, from Lebanon. The Lebanese government launched a new holiday in Lebanon, the first ever in the world of a joint Christian-Muslim celebration in honor of Virgin Mary, who is venerated in both Christianity and Islam. Celebrated on March 25th, a few weeks ago, on the Feast of Annunciation, this first Islamic Christian day will be celebrated annually in Lebanon. Called Together Around Mary, Our Lady, this celebration was a symbol of national unity, bringing the two main communities in Lebanon together around a new religious feast. The government has plans to erect a statue of Virgin Mary in the square in front of Lebanon's National Museum. The square where the statue will be located is actually a major intersection and might be renamed in honor of the Virgin Mary. The statue itself would reproduce a stylized Virgin Mary surrounded by a crescent moon, Islam's symbol par excellence. The plan was several years in the making through consultations with Christian and Muslim religious leaders. But the decision finally came on during the meeting of the Lebanese cabinet on March the 13th. The original idea of making the Virgin Mary a symbol of a joint Christian-Muslim celebration came to Sheikh Mohammed Nokari, the General Secretary of Dar al-Fatwa, or House of Decree, during Annunciation celebrations at Jamhur College in Beirut. The idea was welcomed and supported by the co-chairs of the Lebanese Islamic Christian National Dialogue Committee, as well as Prime Minister Fuad Siniora. For this new feast, a religious ceremony was held in the Chapel of Our Lady College in Jamhur, during which Christians and Muslims prayed together to the Virgin Mary. There were hymns, songs, psalms, sacred music, testimonials, and readings from scriptures. Mary, as we know, is venerated in Christianity as Mother of God or as Birth Giver of God, Astvazadzin in Armenian, and in myriad different ways or titles. She is equally held in great esteem and respect in Islam. Indeed, the account of the Annunciation of the angel Gabriel to the Virgin Mary is recounted in the Holy Quran in Surah or chapter entitled Maryam, as she is known in Arabic. "Behold," the angel said, "O Maryam, Allah has chosen you and purified you, chosen you above the women of all nations." We read in Quran verse 342. The Prophet Muhammad himself regarded Mary as the best woman to ever live, as someone who had reached the ultimate state of servanthood. In Islam, she is considered the greatest example to any believer of the transforming and life-giving power of pure, selfless adoration of the divine. Let us hope and pray that this very positive and inspiring initiative will spread to other parts of the world. Reportedly, the organizers have already contacted representatives in other countries so that next year similar ceremonies could be held in other countries such as Egypt, Morocco, Jordan, Poland, Italy, and France. As we discussed some weeks ago, religions and faiths are not in conflict in and of themselves, as we have seen in recent years and even in recent months. But it is people, individuals, or religious or political leaders who create false conflicts, misrepresentations, or differences. Indeed, more such joint feasts and celebrations are needed. More such common understanding is needed, and yes, more such joint prayers to the divine are needed. I think this is a beautiful and a very positive development and an initiative that's coming out of the Middle East, from Lebanon, from a place that's known only for conflicts through the news or on our television screens. So it's really exciting that this is happening, and let us hope and pray that it will spread to other parts of our troubled globe. So I leave you to ponder on the positive effects of understanding and dialogue among religions and civilizations, and the powerful impact they could have on various societies in conflict. So until next time, this is Hrachi Chilingirian with the Global Perspective.
That is something else. I mean, you know, when you talk about miracles, a lot of times we look for miracles to be with thunder and lightning, forgetting that, you know, it's not just clouds that create thunder and lightning. I mean, in this story that Hrach presented, I mean, do you see the miracle really being thunder and lightning? That communities that you wouldn't think otherwise are now reaching across borders, reaching across tables, and discussing some very, very simple elements of faith. I really appreciate this installment, and I hope that you can see that really miracles are all around us. And that's how I want to end today's podcast, by saying that, you know, we're expecting a very big miracle in a couple weeks. Every year, our In His Shoes ministry engages in a 30-hour famine. We fast for 30 hours. And during that 30 hours, we're engaged in prayer, in educationals. We get together. And this year, I'm hoping that a few communities are going to join us via the internet, and we're going to be able to share with one another. But let me tell you what we specifically do. We ask people to sponsor us by making donations, by taking that money as an item of, as a tool item, and using it as a tool to buy food. We buy the food through World Vision. We found that World Vision is one of those organizations that, first of all, has the infrastructure in place. Just like taxes, I cannot build a school, I cannot build a road, and so I pay my taxes thinking that together we will be able to build that school. The same way, I cannot get out to the Chad Desert right now to feed those children who are starving because of the genocide in Darfur. But there is an organization that is doing that, so I am willing to pay my taxes, my dues to that. That's how simple it is. And for 30 hours, we fast. That's going to be taking place on April 25th from 7 in the morning, and we go all the way to April 26th, Sunday, and we break the fast. We have our break fast, breakfast with the Holy Communion, the body and blood of Jesus Christ, entering our bodies and saying that, you know, this is the miracle, that we were able to raise some money and save some children's lives. And I'm inviting you to participate in that. It's that simple. This coming Sunday, one of our people, the Beranians, Mark and Sue Beranians, have offered their backyard so that we can have a small little gathering. We have some musicians who have donated their time and their talent. We're going to get together and hopefully raise part of this money. We're inviting you to participate. The best way, go to our website, inhisshoes.org. Now, if you're in an area where you'd like to do this, not only make a donation, but would like to fast with us, please drop me an email. Drop it directly to me. You could send me an email at father@inhisshoes.org. It'll come right to me. And let me know where you're at, and we could set up something. If it's not too far away, we can maybe even send somebody over there to do the famine with you. Whatever you do, participate. Use that tool that God has given you to do some work, to do what is pleasing to God. Just as Jesus said, with that unrighteous money, the tool of this world, do the work that is the tool of the next world. Help feed, help clothe, help others in need. Well, with that, we are at the end of this podcast and looking forward to next week. And I got to tell you, I'm still on a high, and I want you to keep me on this high by sending your feedback to me at feedback@apostle.net. We promise to read everything. Maybe not get a chance to answer everybody's email, but we appreciate all of your comment. We appreciate your donations. Go on inhisshoes.org and just press on the donate button. And most of all, keep us in your prayers. And I promise I'll keep you in my prayers. Let me know what you're up to. Give us some feedback. we always appreciate being in touch with you, because that's how we take the next steps. So for all the good people who put this podcast together, for Susie, our producer, for Haracha out in London, for Ani with her bubbles, and for Ken, who is back, and yes, he is still single, although he's got a toaster. Now, is that a wedding gift? Well, we'll get to that next time. But for all the good people, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
Trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week.